Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I've got some flyers that I want to hand out, give you an idea of what our organization is about. I also had a poster presentation earlier on cannabis and PTSD, so I've got a bunch of leftover papers up here in case anybody's interested in that. As we get started here, I wanted to make sure that since I was supposed to be on at 5:15, I wasn't talking just to myself, so I've got an old friend of mine and my wife are here, and I'm glad to see there's a few other people besides that. When we were talking about integrative medicine, it reminded me that when I was with the Public Health Service here in San Francisco, we were very big on comprehensive care, and I kind of think that integrative medicine takes off where comprehensive care started. And we had a clinic that Professor Judson, who's my old friend that's here, was the administrator of, that was part of a community service center. So I've been involved in integrative medicine for a long time. I've been involved in terms of cannabinoid medicine actively for 12 years. I do pain management in Santa Barbara. And the reason we have the AACM, we were started in 2007, is we were concerned about those doctors that were practicing minimalist medicine. You know, where there was a line at a cannabis expo and you could see the line move. We figure that that's not practicing really comprehensive medicine. And the thing about cannabis is that it has real medical value. And I'm not exactly sure how I got put on this panel on cancer, but it turns out that that was very wise. It would have been even wiser to ask Dr. Abrams, who spoke in this room before, to talk on that topic, because he is very much a bigger expert than I am. Which is not to say that you can't have somebody up here who's a clinician talking about the medicinal use of cannabis for the treatment of cancer. And I've expanded my talk to include some discussion of how cannabis treats cancer. I downloaded something recently that said, among the casualties of the war on drug are those who use marijuana to relieve their pain and suffering. 10 million Americans have been busted for pot. I think that's a little bit higher than that. It's about 850,000 a year, and we've been busting people since 1971. So that's kind of a modest sort of a figure. An American is arrested every 38 seconds for cannabis. And I cut something else out of the paper that talked about the differences between Marinol and marijuana. And Marinol is only THC. I'm the number one prescriber of Marinol in Santa Barbara. It doesn't work as well as marijuana, has more side effects than marijuana, and it costs more money. But other than that, it's a fine medication. Okay, we'll move on. But illness is no laughing matter. drug czar, the best drug czar was Dr. Jerome Jaffe back under Richard Nixon. Very ironical. The best budget for the drug czar was by Richard Nixon. Very ironical. Nixon had 75% of his budget that went for treatment, 25% that went for criminal justice. We now have $20 billion worth of waste in the drug czar's office, and we do not have a doctor in the drug czar's office. General McCaffrey, who was accused of war crimes by Seymour Hersh, after Prop 215 passed here in California and the proposition to legalize medicinal cannabis in Arizona passed, General McCaffrey, who'd never been to medical school, as far as I know, said that recommending cannabis for anything was Cheech and Chong medicine. Apparently, he was unfamiliar with the fact that there's 5,000 years of history of the use of cannabis, and it's been in every major materia medica ever printed, including the United States Pharmacopoeia from 1854 until 1942. So let's move along here. So we wanted a professional organization that recognized and promoted the highest practice and ethical standards. We wanted to be a source for accurate, clinically applicable information. We wanted to recognize quality practitioners and to encourage basic science and clinical research. And we have been doing that since 2007 with a bare-bones staff. Our leadership includes the former director of the Illinois Department of Mental Health, former deputy director of Nixon's President's Special Action Office on Drug Abuse Prevention, the president of the Society of Cannabis Clinicians, former director of a county health department, and was the director of health services at San Diego State University. And you know that there are 17 states in which cannabis is legal to be used for medicinal purposes. The members of our organization are from many of those states: New Mexico, Colorado, California, Oregon, Washington, Montana, Michigan, Maine, and Rhode Island. So we feel that it's important to regulate the field, and you heard the previous speaker talk about the need for standards. We want to marginalize those doctors that are practicing fig leaf medicine. We don't want them to lose their medicine. We don't want them to be hung from the yardarm. We just want them to practice good medicine. If your doctor has spent 5 minutes with you to make a recommendation for the medical use of marijuana, you probably don't have the legal protection that you think you do. We have made some input to isolated state legislators who are interested in having reasonable regulations. We developed a certification test that if you pass it and you have 2 years of experience doing cannabinoid medicine plus 20 hours of Category 1 CME on cannabinoids and a cannabinoid system, we'll give you a certification as being certified in cannabinoid medicine. Our practice standards include having a bona fide doctor-patient relationship, reviewing the medical records, doing an appropriate history and physical, and only recommend for qualifying conditions. When somebody calls up our office, and we're a couple of miles from the University of California at Santa Barbara, we ask them 2-3 questions. What's your diagnosis? When's the last? What kind of treatment have you received? When's the last time you got treated? And when somebody calls up sounding every bit like a sophomore at UCSB saying, I can't eat and I can't sleep, and then we say, well, when was the last time you saw a doctor? And this will resonate with this group, and they say, well, I don't believe in doctors. And we say, well, we're not going to make an appointment to see Dr. Bierman. But we do say you can go see Dr. Susanne down the road. He'll be glad to see you. He'll charge you $150, and he'll give you a recommendation. And if you have to go to court, good luck. But I mean, another reason we don't give appointments to college students mostly is because they're healthy. And when you're talking about the medical use of cannabis, it's supposed to be for people that have medical problems. And this, I'm not really crazy about this. This is really a doctor, and she has gone on to even bigger and better things. I was once criticized for being a sexist for criticizing this non-professional thing and then adding, but she did have good legs. Nevertheless, she does have good legs, and I am a sexist, and I admit it. Okay, so we expect our members to have a reasonable familiarity with the cultural and medicinal history of cannabis. Sean Nen is allegedly the author of the first pharmacopoeia, the Ping Tao Ching, that was supposed to have been written in 2637 BC. Those of you who speak Chinese, I'm sorry if I murdered the pronunciation of that. And the oldest written copy of this goes back to somewhere between the 1st century AD or BC. Okay. Sir William Osler included discussion of cannabis in the first textbook of internal medicine. It, as I said, was in the United States Pharmacopoeia from 1854 to 1941, and it was the third most commonly used drug around the turn of the 19th to the 20th century. There was all kinds of utilization of cannabis in the 19th century. We had research that was done in the 1930s and 40s. The president of the American Public Health Association in 1914 was Dr. William Woodward, who in 1937 testified before the House Ways and Means Committee against the Marijuana Tax Act, which, if you believe the AMA, had nothing to do with marijuana and everything to do with hemp. The Marijuana Tax Act, the AMA was never contacted when it was developed during the two-year history that it was developed. It was developed at the behest of Lamont DuPont, who was the president of DuPont. They were concerned about competition from hemp. Dr. Woodward said he'd contacted the Children's Bureau, the Bureau of Prisons, the Pharmacy Unit of the American Public Health U.S. Public Health Service, and none of them had the least bit of information to support what Harry Anslinger was saying. And we've had a lot of modern research. The first was in 1949 on seizures. Dr. Raphael Mechoulam isolated THC in 1964. And as time has gone on, and I've got Dr. Abrams down here, who I said spoke here recently. As you know, Dr. Abrams is an oncologist. That is, the three of you that were here when Dr. Abrams spoke, you know he's an oncologist. And he's been a little bit careful, as we doctors and MDs have to be, in terms of saying, well, this stuff will cure cancer. We know that if you're a mouse and you have breast cancer, it will cure your breast cancer. That I can say unequivocally. Dr. McAllister at UCSF injected THC intraperitoneally into mice that were genetically bred to be have a propensity for breast cancer. The control group was injected saline. Within 6 weeks, those that were injected THC, their cancer was gone. Okay, so in terms of the our group, the American Academy of Cannabinoid Medicine, one of our efforts is to get rid of the ha-ha factor. This is not pot we're talking about, this is cannabis. And in fact, Dr. Woodward in his 1937 testimony said, you should not be calling this the Marijuana Tax Act if you do pass it. Nobody knows what you're talking about. And that was not an accident that nobody knew what they were talking about. Okay, so we want to get those physicians that are practicing minimalist medicine to stop, or at least to stop having their recommendations recognized by dispensaries. And I think that we're going to have some effect. We've got some patient unions that said, we want to know the names of your members and the names of your certified members. I was just talking to the director of public health for Brookline, which I think is interesting historically, since Dr. Woodward had been the director of public health in Boston from 1913 to 1920. And he said, if this gets legalized in Massachusetts, it's on the ballot there, I want to make sure that we do it right. So this is just some more about us. I'm going to move on because I know you want to hear a little bit more about the therapeutic effects. And there's our board of directors that has some pretty impressive folks on it. Dr. Carter's our president. He's an expert on amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. He's at the University of Washington. And Lester Greenspoon wrote The Forbidden Medicine, is on our advisory board. Craig Reinemann, who's a professor at Santa Cruz and has written several books on drug policy, is on our board. Joe Allen was the district attorney of Mendocino County. He's my attorney now. I first saw him on 60 Minutes in 1983 saying marijuana should be legalized. Okay, so you get the point. Our mission is to set and encourage high standards of practice, recognize quality cannabinoid medicine doctors, and provide reliable clinical information to physicians, the media, and the public, and sponsor and co-sponsor continuing medical education. I urge you to check our website. You've got our flyer there. You can take a look at the material we have. So the number one reason for recommending cannabis is for relief of pain, and it's been used for 5,000 years. You look at any materia medica, it says for relief of pain. The first time I heard about cannabis as a medicinal was from my father, who was a pharmacist. We were talking about prohibition. It was 1959 in a small town in Wisconsin. Other than having some vague idea that this was something that jazz musicians smoked, I had no idea really what marijuana was. My dad said, you know, when I was a freshman in pharmacy school at the University of Minnesota in 1928, one of our assignments was to make tincture of cannabis, and of course we had to be very careful because the alcohol was illegal. cannabis, of course, was not illegal. And in the 1920s, physicians were writing about 3 million prescriptions a year containing cannabis, and there were around 30 over-the-counter preparations that contained cannabis. So what's it useful for? Well, it's useful for pain. It's in my father's 1927 Remington textbook of pharmacy as used as an anodyne, which is an archaic word for painkiller. The number one time for people to take medicinal cannabis is at bedtime, partly because it helps you sleep, partly because it relieves your pain, partly because some people have restless leg syndrome. Nausea, during the 1970s and 1980s, there were studies done in 8 states that showed that cannabis was useful in treating nausea and in stimulating appetite. Dr. Abrams did a study with cannabis where he found that people who took cannabis it stopped their AIDS wasting, and they gained weight, and they gained more weight than if they used Marinol, which is synthetic Delta-9 THC. It's also very good at treating connective tissue disorders like arthritis, restless leg syndrome, complex regional pain syndrome, fibromyalgia, and the list goes on and on. One thing that sounds a little bit counterintuitive is that it addresses attention deficit disorder. If we have time, I'll talk a little bit more about how it does that, but I want to get to the cancer part. Migraines, Sir William Osler put down that cannabis was the best treatment for migraines. That was in the late 1800s, the early 1900s. As late as 1942, the editor of the Journal of the American Medical Association, Morris Fishbein, said that cannabis was the best treatment for migraines. The first modern study on cannabis was done in 1949 on seizures. It lowers your intraocular pressure. I've already mentioned the fibromyalgia, restless leg syndrome. It's very useful in treating peripheral neuropathy, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. Crohn's disease, IBS, cyclical vomiting syndrome, all of those conditions are benefited substantially by taking cannabis, as is depression. In addition to depression, other mental health conditions that are benefited from the use of cannabis are anxiety, stress. You heard some discussion about stress when Dr. Abrams spoke earlier, and bipolar disorder. There are some studies that have been done by Dr. Piamelli at UC Irvine with mice indicating that cannabis is useful in decreasing panic attacks, bipolar disorder, Tourette syndrome, and attention deficit disorder. Okay, now let's talk about cannabis and cancer. We know that cannabis cures cancer in mice. Now, as a physician, because there's been a great deal of pressure to prevent having these studies, particularly in the United States, if you were my patient, I couldn't say, use this stuff to treat your cancer. I can say, use this stuff to stimulate your appetite. Use this stuff to take care of the nausea that comes along with the chemotherapy and radiation. Use this stuff to help you sleep. Use this stuff to help your depression. And oh, by the way, while you're using it for all that, it just might kill your cancer. Because we know that there are at least 15 different cell types that have been killed in tissue culture or in mice. The film by Len Richman, I assisted, I guess I was a technical consultant, and it's a very good film, and I suggest that anybody that's interested in cannabis and cancer that you take a look at Len's film. Now, in March of 2001, the National Cancer Institute acknowledged on their website the cancer-fighting properties of some of the chemical components of cannabis, and that was because Dr. Abrams was on the committee. That lasted 3 days that it was on their website, and then they took it off. Then the National Cancer Institute said cannabis may cause anti-tumor effects by various mechanisms, including induction of cell death, so-called apoptosis, inhibition of cell growth, and inhibition of angiogenesis and metastasis. You can hardly beat that. So, we have an idea that cannabis is useful in not only relieving some of the sequelae of cancer, but of actually curing cancer. There are a number of people that are talking about the use of topicals for treating cancer of the skin, whether it's squamous cell or whether it's basal cell. Can I have 5 more minutes? Okay. Because there's going to be a lot of questions here about the material that you presented as well as what I'm talking about here. So cannabis, like any plant, has a lot of compounds in it. And, of course, my response to that when the federal government said, a lot of compounds in it. Well, then I guess we should stop drinking coffee because that has 800 and some odd compounds. And be careful of tomatoes, that has 383 compounds. We don't know enough about the cannabinoids in there, or for that matter, the phenoids or the flavonoids. We do know that CBD is really important, and CBD, cannabidiol, probably has more potent anti-cancer effects than THC. Interestingly, the Department of Health and Human Services has patented CBD. And it also doesn't have any euphoria and tends to damp down the euphoria of THC, so you can use higher dosage of THC if you have a high CBD strain. There's also something, so the endocannabinoid system, the largest neurotransmitter system in the brain, characterized in 1992 by Raphael Mechoulam and a number of his colleagues. It's a modulator of sensory input. It does that through, I think, releasing dopamine, certainly by enhancing retrograde inhibition and by stimulating CB1 and CB2 receptors. Retrograde inhibition is unique in that you have the endocannabinoids that go from the postsynaptic neuron to the presynaptic neuron, and retrograde inhibition slows down the speed of neurotransmission. So you can see how that would help migraine headaches and seizures, which are caused by overstimulation of the brain. But it also slows down the speed of neurotransmission, and that's helpful in attention deficit disorder, because now the ideas are moving more slowly and you can grab onto them. Actually, this particular diagram isn't particularly useful. I just threw it in there to show you that we're really talking about nerve endings. I got a better one, it's on my poster there. So there are various routes of administration. People, critics say, well, you don't know medicine that you inhale. Well, if you go into the anesthesiology department of any large hospital, you'll find there are lots of medications that you inhale. If you go to somebody who's a respiratory therapist, you'll find there's lots of medications that you inhale. But you don't want to smoke it because it causes irritation. You don't want to smoke it because there are carcinogens in it. You don't want to smoke it because it's causing coughing and spooking, coughing and sputum production. That's fine. You can vaporize it. You can use it sublingually. You can take it orally. And Dr. Donald Tashkin, who has done a number of studies for NIDA, found that cannabis smoking does not cause cancer. Boy, was NIDA mad. He found that the more marijuana you smoked, the less likely you were to have cancer. And we'll talk about his study later if you want to. Other safety studies that have been done, or governmental reviews, have been done by the U.S., Great Britain, Canada, Australia, the city of New York, the Panama Canal Zone. All of them recommended legalizing marijuana for recreational use. We're not talking about using it for medical use. We're talking about recreational use. Every one of these, including the 1970 Nixon Marijuana Commission. In 1988, the FDA's chief administrative law judge, Francis Young, after a two-year rescheduling hearing and his finding of fact, said cannabis was one of the safest therapeutic agents known to man. Marinol is legal in almost every country in the world. It's Delta-9 THC. It has more side effects than marijuana, more expensive than marijuana, not as effective as marijuana, but it's approved by the United States government since 1985. Sativex is a under-the-tongue spray. It's a one-to-one mixture of a strain of cannabis that's high in THC and another one that's high in CBD. They have six greenhouses in the south of England, each one with a different strain of cannabis. Each one has 10,000 plants. So they've standardized the stuff. We already talked about its efficacy. House of Lords did a report in 1997, Institute of Medicine 1999, GW Pharmaceuticals that makes Sativex has been doing studies since 1999, and right here in California, the California Marijuana Research Center has done clinical studies from 2000 to the present. They came out with a report about a year and a half ago on 18 studies that they had supervised, done at four different medical schools. This is a sublingual spray that I was talking about. It's legal in 10 countries in the world, maybe legal in this country in 2005. You can't smoke marijuana legally. The federal government says it has no known medical value in the United States. That's why it's a Schedule I drug, even though 17 states say it has legal value in their states. So I'm not really sure what map the United States government is looking at. Marinol is not prescription marijuana. Marinol is THC, one compound in sesame seed oil. That's so you can't smoke it. This is a picture of Sunil Agarwal, who was very important in getting the AMA to House of Delegates to vote to reschedule cannabis, urging the federal government to reschedule it. They've since been joined by the governors of Rhode Island, Vermont, Washington, and Colorado. Okay, and this is Judge Young. He says, the evidence in this record ruling clearly shows that marijuana has been accepted as capable of relieving the distress of a great number of very ill people and doing so with safety under medical supervision. It would be unreasonable, arbitrary, and capricious for the DEA to continue to stand between those sufferers and the benefits of this substance in the light of the evidence in this record. And that's before we discovered that cannabis cured, could cure cancer. There was a researcher at in Madrid named Dr. Manuel Guzman, who found that by injecting THC directly into a glioblastoma multiforme, the same kind of cancer that Ted Kennedy died from, in 9 people, this was a safety study. It wasn't to see whether it would cure the cancer. In 2 of the 9 people, it made the tumor smaller, which is pretty remarkable for that very aggressive tumor.